welcome back to Rabbi Manning for this semester.
Okay, it's nice to be back. I'm sorry I was absent for a couple of weeks. I can assure you I wasn't on vacation. I was working hard, running a program. But it is good to be back, and everyone should have a Daf Makoris from today's class. I apologize, I haven't got my little voice machine with me today, I forgot it. But you should be able to hear me, the class is fairly small. You'll see that I have skipped to the end of the Yud Gimel Ikrim, because it's clear that in our short time together, we're not going to have time to do everything. So in order not to miss out on the... In order not to miss out on the exciting ones, I skipped through to the end. If you'll recall, what we've covered so far, we had a couple of introductory sessions on the nature of the Ikrim, why the Rambam wrote the Yud Gimel Ikrim. We had a lightning fast session on the first three Ikrim, talking about the nature of God, the unity of God, the morality that is founded on the Yud Gimel Ikrim. We talked a bit about that. That's definitely worth going over if you can. I hope to have all of this up on my website. I'm encountering a little bit of a problem at the moment, which is quite ironic and rather amusing, which is we have an internet filter on our house, which is to be recommended, and it's usually extremely good, but it bans objectionable and offensive websites, including, it seems, RabbiManning.com. The web filter has informed me that my own content is unacceptable for viewing. So if you are listening to this shiur on the internet, then you will know that I managed to get in. No, it's not. The settings. Oh no, I've tried all of that. But they didn't give me a reason. I mean, it would have been funny if they had said, "We find your hashkofas unacceptable." I've tried all that. I'll crack it, don't worry. I have to ask someone who's into sort of hacking into email sites. So anyway, so if you are listening to this now, if you are listening to this on the internet, then you'll know I managed to do it. Now, the 12th Iker is Mashiach. The 12th Iker is a fascinating one and much talked about, much misunderstood. Most people's understanding of the Iker of Mashiach is simply the first source, which people often quote, and I've said this before, and I'll say it again, people often quote the Ani Ma'amins as the Yud Gimel Ikrim, and they really are not. They are a later summary, which doesn't always represent what the Rambam actually has to say, but I'll read it because it's so famous. Ani Ma'amin Be'emunah Shelema, Beviyat HaMashiach. So I believe in the coming of the Mashiach. Ve'af al pi, Sheyitma Me'ah. Even though the Mashiach will delay, Im kol zeh, in spite of all of this, and there's a krechts in kol zeh, in spite of all of the stuff that we've had to go through, achakel lo shiavoy, I will anticipate, I will wait that the Mashiach comes. The wording of the Rambam himself is actually a little bit more sophisticated, and there's more going on. Let's look at it together, and then what I want to do with you today, in the next hour and 5 minutes, is give you a good understanding of the Rambam's concept of Yemos HaMashiach, from the different sources that the Rambam brings, both in the Yud Gimel Ikrim, in the Ad Chazaka, in the Sefer HaMitzvahs, a little bit of the Mishnah of the Mora Nevuchim, in the Geres Teiman. There are many, many sources that we need to have a look at. What I will not try to do today, as I've not tried to do for any of these Ikrim, is try and summarize what everybody else says about this issue. That's a whole different discussion. We will touch on some of the non-Maimonidean views of Mashiach, but really we're interested today in focusing what is the Rambam telling me I have to believe in when he's telling me, again, that remember the beginning of the course, the Rambam says if anybody even doubts any of the veracity of any of these Ikrim, they are going straight down. There is no Olam Hava, they lose the Chelik, etc. So we need to know at least what the Rambam has to say before we look at what anybody else. Have a look at number two. Here's the Rambam's own wording. Hayisoid Hashneimasa. And again, I would recap that the original wording, of course, was written in Judeo-Arabic. I am using the translation of Rav Yitzchak Shilat, Rav Shilat from Ma'alei Adumim, which is meant to be one of the most accurate and Focus translations into modern Hebrew. That is the translation I've been using for all of the Yud Gimel Ikrim I brought you in Hebrew, and two of this one as well. Hayisayda Shnei Masah. Yemois HaMashiach, the days of Mashiach. V'hu l'ha'amin u'la'amit. To understand, to be true, to believe to be true, sheyavoi, the Mashiach will come, v'lo yacher, and he will not delay. That there won't be an unnecessary built-in delay to the process. And he quotes a pasuk in Habakkuk, im yitmama, if he does delay, chakelon, anticipate him. So that's where this lashon comes from. It's actually from a posik in Habakkuk. Okay? It's funny, if try this on the street, go out and say, where does it say im yitmamea chakeloi? Everybody will say the ani mamin. It's a posik in Habakkuk. V'loi yusam loi kate katsu. And you're not allowed, and the Rambam fleshes out here, you're not allowed to try and give a specific date for the coming of Mashiach. And you can't try to interpret the verses of Mashiach to predict the date of the coming of Mashiach. This is all part of the Yud Gimel of the 12th Ikkah. Not just to believe the Mashiach's coming, but to understand that predicting his coming is not allowed. Of course, one of the reasons for that is it builds off what the Rambam just said. If I predict the Mashiach is coming in 2015, then I'm not now anticipating him in 2012, 13, and 14, and therefore I'm not chakaloi that he could come any minute, because the prediction delays, if you like, the coming of Mashiach. Although we will see that a number of people have indeed predicted and given a date for the advent of the Messianic era, including the Rambam himself. Which we'll see, almost, not quite, but we'll see exactly how that works. Chachamim oimrim, and Chachamim say, Tapuach dasam, let the view of those who think this explode, shel machashvei kitzim, of those who try to calculate the end. Chachamim had very negative things to say about those who try to calculate when Mashiach is coming. Now, that's the first part. Ulahamin begedulasei. And we have to believe and understand how great the era of Mashiach will be. So it's not just to know that Mashiach will come. It's to have an understanding of what we're looking forward to. It's not enough just to say, oh yes, Messianic era, Yemos HaMashiach. What does that mean? I have to understand that. V'ahavasai, and the love that we will have, that Mashiach will have for us, and we will have for Mashiach, what that means. V'hatfila alav, and to daven for Mashiach. It's not enough that we just have to believe. It's very interesting. The Rambam is taking this Ikkah not just into a thought process, but into an existential kind of understanding. I exist, I daven, I believe, and I actually express that belief in my tefillah. Of course, our tefillah includes et semech David avdecha, etc. Three times a day, et tefillah for Mashiach. Because every Novi, every prophet has spoken about this, Mimoshe, from Moshe ad Malachi. Until Malachi, who was the last Navi. Malachi, incidentally, of course, the last of the Nevuah, the last of the Nevuah that Klal Yisrael had, the very final Nevuah in Malachi is... Yes, Shalech et Eliyah, a Navi, I'm sending hello, a Navi, which is a Nevuah about Mashiach. Just a little piece of tangential information, Malachi is identified in Chazal with Ezra. And one of the reasons given for the fast of the 10th of Tevis, which was last week, is the death of Ezra, and therefore the death of Malachi and the end of prophecy. One of the things that we're mourning for when we fast on the 10th of Tevis is not just the Beis HaMikdash, but is the end of Nevuah, which is an angle on the 10th of Tevis that many people don't have, and which is an important one to bring out. But that's not for now. Umisha Meitzel Boy Sofik, anyone who has any doubts, or Mazalzel Dvaroi, or ridicules the prophecies of Mashiach, Mechazik HaTorah is denying the Torah, Asher Ya'adat Boi, which gave this destiny to the Jewish people, which prophesied, which forecast this, Beferush, explicitly, Beparshas Bilam Va'atem Natavim. And he's going to show you later where indeed in the Parshas in the Torah we'd refer explicitly to the coming of Mashiach. Michlala Yesod Azeh, included in this Ikkah, is Ki Ein Melech Yisrael Ela Midovit. That there's another aspect of this Ikkah is to understand that there can never be a ruler of the Jewish people other than David HaMelech and his family. Which is also a bit of a side kind of kick the Chashmonaim. One of the issues of the Chashmonaim is that very nice, they took sovereignty back to the Jewish people from the Greeks in the Hanukkah story, but then they failed to hand it over to the descendants of David HaMelech, to the descendants of Zerubbabel who lived there, and they kept it for themselves, and they of course were not from the tribe of Yehuda, they were from the tribe of Levi, because they were Kohanim. So this is a reference to that. Also, Mizera Shlomo, and this is what people don't always realize, B'yichud, and specifically through Shlomo HaMelech. It's not good enough that I have to understand that Mashiach has to come from David HaMelech. The Mashiach must come from Shlomo HaMelech. Why? Who cares? Why is that part of the process of this Ikka, that I have to believe the Mashiach is not only through David but also through Shlomo? Anyone know? This is also a bit of a side sweep at Christianity. If you read the Gospels carefully, but I'm not suggesting you do, but necessary. But if you do, I'm not suggesting you don't either. But if you do, you'll see that there's a whole discussion there as to the lineage that the Gospels attribute through from Jesus through to David HaMelech. And one of the Gospels there, Luke talks about the idea that David HaMelech, that the Jesus is descended through Nathan ben David, not Shlomo ben David. And therefore, one of the things the Rambam is referring to here is that we do not follow the lineage attributed to Christianity and the messianic claims of Christianity, but we claim that Mashiach had to come through Shlomo. You could easily miss that. And he stresses that in the Igeres Teiman as well. He talks about that it has to come through Shlomo HaMelech.
The actual lineage starts at Joseph, the husband of Mary.
It depends. If you read Matthew at the beginning, he goes all the way through to King David.
But he stops it at the husband of Mary.
Right.
And they make no claim that he is the actual father.
You have to ask this to a Christian theologian, which is the whole claim that God is the Father is, of course, self-defeating, because then you cannot be descended, at least on the male side, from David and Melech. We're not the first people to raise this issue on Christianity, and it's one which is discussed in many places. Needless to say, the Christians latch onto the Kabbalistic idea of Mashiach ben Yosef and try to make a lot of that. We'll talk a little bit more about that later on. No, I know you didn't, but they're using it the whole thing. The Rambam clearly says in the Igeres Teiman that Jesus' father was not Jewish, and this is a tradition that we have. Yes, that the mother was Mary and the father was not Jewish. Okay, fine. So fine. Okay, I can see a new opening for Machon Lander here. That's right. Yes, that's right. This is why I'm not getting into my own site. So you can look into that in your own server. Kol mi shecholek al davar mishpacha azoy, is anyone who argues with this family, this royal family of King David through Shlomo, koifeh b'Hashem u'dvarav neviyav, denies Hashem and also the words of the Nevi. Fine. So the 12th Ikar includes a confidence that Mashiach will come, a non-prediction of the actual date the Mashiach is coming, appreciating the greatness of the Messianic era and what Mashiach will do, davening for Mashiach, and the idea that a Jewish king has to come through David and Shlomo. So lots in there, lots of stuff in there. And what I want to do with you now is try and give you an understanding from the Rambam's other writings, like we have in the other Ikrim, because the Rambam is not writing the Yud Gimel Ikrim in a vacuum. He wrote other things as well. And at the end of Sefer of the Hilchas Malachim, at the very end of the Mishnah Torah, of the Arech HaZaka, the Rambam includes two very important prokim. Chapter 11 and chapter 12 of the Sefer Malachim of the Arech HaZaka deal explicitly and extensively with the Yemos HaMashiach, and we need to, at least in this session, get a lot of data in our heads to understand what the Rambam says about it there. But first, the other place that the Rambam talks about it is in Hilchas Tshuva. In Hilchas Tshuva, the Rambam is really interested in defining Olam Haba. What is Olam Haba? And the Rambam doesn't want us to make a mistake of conflating Olam Haba and Yemos HaMashiach, of confusing the two and mixing things up. For the Rambam, Yemos HaMashiach is very, very, very much Olam Hazeh. And Olam Haba is something completely different. Have a look at number 3, please. V'kamatama David v'hisaveh l'chai Olam Haba. How much did David want Olam Haba? Shenema lule emanti diros v'tuv Hashem be'eretz chaim. David is davening. If only we could see Eretz Chaim. Eretz Chaim is the life in Olam Haba. Ukvadi u chachamim harishonim shetayvus Olam Haba ein koch ba'adam la'asigo alaborio. Nobody can understand Olam Haba. We don't really have any understanding of what it feels like, what we understand it'll be like in Olam Haba. That in your day of Godlo, we don't understand how great it is, v'yafia, how amazing it is, v'asma, the essence of what it is. Okay, Ela Kodesh Baruch Hu Levad. Only Hashem really understands Olam Haba. We have really no connection with it. V'shekol hatoyva shemisnabim bahem hanavim l'Israel, and all of the wonderful things that the Nevi'im are prophesying about in the books of the Nevi'im, these are not Olam Haba. These are all things which are physical things. And these are things that we will get in the Mosa Mashiach. When sovereignty returns to the Jewish people. So don't make the mistake of thinking that when you're reading Yeshaya, Yirmiyahu, etc., it's talking about Olam Haba. No one knows anything about Olam Haba. The Nevi'im don't, we don't, only HaKadosh Baruch Hu does. What they are telling us about, however, is Yimash Mashiach. Aval, Tovet Chaylam Haba, Ein La'erech V'dimion. There is no way of comparing it to anything. Lo Yidimua Nevi'im, they don't even understand it, they don't talk about it. Kedei Shelo Yitchasu Oysa B'dimion. Because if they try to explain it, they will only take away from it. It reminds me a little bit of the Rambam we saw, when we're not allowed to positively describe a Kodesh Baruch Hu. We saw that in the Rambam's negative theology, remember? All you can ever say about Hashem is what Hashem is not, because once you start to describe what Hashem is, you're actually taking away from the essence of what Hashem is. Similarly, Olam Haba is some kind of ultimate connection, some kind of total bond with what we call Nehene B'Ziv Hashchina. And therefore, just like you can't describe HaKadosh Baruch Hu, you can't describe Olam Haba either. For Hushe Yeshiyahu Oime, Ein Loi Rasa, when Yeshaya says, no eye's ever seen it, Elohim Zolascha, apart from you, God, Yaseh Lemachakelo, you'll do this for those who wait for him, etc., etc. Kaloima Hatoiva Shaloi Rasa Oisa, Ein Novi, no Novi ever saw that. Okay, the eye of no Novi saw that. Ela Asa Oisa Elohim La Adam Shemachakelo, but this will be for us, which awaits us in Yes Hashem in Olam Haba. Amru Chachamim, Kol Nevi'im Kulam Loi Nisnabu Ela Limosa Mashiach. Really, what they're talking about in the Novi is Limosa Mashiach. Aval Olam Haba Ein Lo Rasa Elohim Zolascha. Fine. So what is Yimus HaMashiach? Given that the Nevi'im are talking constantly about Yimus HaMashiach, not about Olam Haba, what is Yimus HaMashiach? Yes. That's talking about Olam Haba. Correct. So we actually saw this source in the very first class, where we talked about what we believe and why belief matters. And the Rambam brings that in Hilchos Teshuvah as well, and says, when it says, Tzadikim, Yoshvim, V'Atrei Seima, Roshehem, V'Nenim, Aziv HaShchina, it's a moshel. No one's really sitting, and no one's really has a head, and no one has a crown. Right, the idea of everyone sitting around in a big Beis HaMedrash. This is all a moshel for the idea, he says, that we will be present without any effort. Excuse me. That's what it means by sitting. And Nenim, Aziv HaShchina, with the crowns on our heads, means the knowledge that we have, the mind that we develop in this world, which will be the essence of what we are in the next world. But we can't envisage what it means to exist in a non-physical world. We really haven't got a clue. Oh, so that we'll talk about that next time. Where does Tchias HaMeisim fit in? We've a long way to go before we get to Tchias HaMeisim. Okay? Let's go. Have a look at number four, please. HaMelech HaMashiach Asid Lavoi. The Lamoid, rather. The King Mashiach will come, and let's look carefully at what he says will be. Well, HaHachsim Malchus Beis David, L'Yoshna, it will return the house of David to its original form, HaMemshal HaRishon, to its original sovereignty. So, the Rambam's description of Mashiach is political, sovereignty, kingdoms, governments. Uboine Mikdash, he will build a temple. Okay? Umakabetz Nidchei Yisrael, the Mashiach will gather in those who are scattered from the Jewish people. V'chozrim kol ha-mishpatim b'yamav, all the laws will return in his days, k'shehayu mikoydim, as they were originally. V'akrivin korbonus, we will bring korbonus, in case you thought the Mashiach will bring in some kind of era where there will be no sacrifices, they will be. But Ois and Shmitin, we'll keep Shmita, the Yovlois, Kakol Mitzvasam, just like the original Mitzvah, Amura B'Torah. So we're talking about a physical sovereignty in which the land of Israel will be under the rule of Israel, and the Torah, classic, Am Yisrael, the Eretz Yisrael, im Torah Yisrael. That's the Rambam. The Rambam is describing. V'kol misha einu ma'amin boy, if you don't believe this, says the Rambam, or misha einu machakel biyaso, you don't anticipate this. And again, if you anticipate something else other than this, I'm not sure the Rambam's too impressed by that. You have to be anticipating the right kind of Mashiach, not the wrong kind of Mashiach. If you're envisaging some kind of miraculous, you know, people flying around in the air and miracles and apples growing on the, you know, bread growing on trees and things like that, that's not what, you're not thinking about Mashiach, you're making that up, he says. If you're not thinking about this understanding of Mashiach, loy b'shan neviim bilvadu kovei, it's not that you're denying the neviim, ela b'tayra Moshe Rabbeinu. You're denying the Torah and you're denying Moshe Rabbeinu. Shehari Torah. Torah Ha'ida Alav, the Torah prophesied about this and predicted this. Shenema, when it says, V'shava Hashem Elokecha Eshvutcha V'rechamecha V'shava Kibetzcha Mikol Ha'amim Im Yenidchacha B'Kseh Hashemayim Misham Kibetzcha Hashem Elokecha Misham Yikrechecha. All the predictions about the ingathering of the exile, there, V'yacha Hashem Elokecha, God will bring you in, etc. Elu Dvarim Mufurashim B'Torah, these are explicit in the Torah. Hein kolon and kolon dvarim shenemar al yidei kolon neviim, and these include everything that's later found in the Navi. So all these predictions about ingathering and people flying to Israel and coming to Israel, all, this is part of the process of restoring the sovereignty of Israel in Yemos HaMashiach. I just led in the 2 weeks since I was with you, I led a Kiruv trip here, like a post-birthright trip of students who are not religious. And I said to them, If you could go back to your great 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 grandparents and tell them that in 2012 you'll be walking onto metal tubes, flying thousands of miles through the air, and coming back to Israel in thousands and thousands and thousands, so they'll say, "Ah, yes, you're Mosa Mashiach," and you'll say, "No, birthright," and they'll say, "What do you mean birthright? That's you're Mosa Mashiach. No, that's what it says." And you'll say, "Yeah, it's birthright." And that's what you have to understand, that people are living through a time which is unprecedented and unbelievable, except for the emunah that we had. There's a certain irony that when the Jewish people were in the depths of Golus, and the idea of sovereignty in Israel and coming back to Israel was so far from the imagination, so they clung to that idea with tenacity and faith. And then when all these things start happening, everyone starts going, whatever. You know, there's a certain, it's almost, that itself is almost a miraculous thing. You would have thought Kal V'Chomer, but it doesn't seem to be a Kal V'Chomer. Now, so the Rambam's talking sovereignty, he's talking the ingathering of the exiles, the building of the temple. Interestingly, he talks about the building of the temple before the ingathering of the exiles, and there's a lot of commentary on that. Does the Rambam envisage Kibbutz Goliath as being at the end, or is he there talking about the 10 tribes? Is he talking about the lost tribes coming in, etc.? That's not really for now. Look at number 5, please, over the page. There's quite a lot of sources on today's sheet, but we've got to get the information before we can analyze it. Now look here, the Rambam has two sources in Perik Yud Aleph and Perik Yud Bet of Hilchos Malachim. Number 5, Al Yale Al Dasach, don't think for 1 minute, he says. So this is telling you what not to think. Shehamelech HaMashiach Tzarech La'asayis Oysos HaMoshin, that there'll be anything miraculous that Mashiach needs to come when Mashiach comes. That's not the right thing to think. U'mechadish Dvorim Ba'olam, and we'll make new things in the world. U'mechayim Esim, don't think for 1 minute that Mashiach will bring back the dead. Now that got the Rambam into some trouble, because people then started accusing the Rambam, what's going on? Don't you believe in the universe of Mashiach? Do you believe in Tchias HaMesim, rather? And the Rambam was forced onto the back foot to write a whole essay proving that he did believe in Yemos HaMashiach, in Tchias HaMesim, excuse me, which we'll get to next time. Okay? So, but don't think that's anything to do with Mashiach. That's got nothing to do with Mashiach. Or Kiyotze B'dvarim Ele, or anything like this. Shehatipshim Omrim. This is what idiots think. Fools. Fools. This is what fools think. Enadav Akein. That's not true. Shehari Rabbi Akiva Chacham Gadol Mechachmei Mishnah Haya. Rabbi Akiva was one of the greatest Chachamim. For who Haya Noisikela Shele Ben Koziva Hamelach. He was the armor bearer. He was the right hand man for Bar Kochba. For who Haya Oymalav. He would say about him, Shehu Melech HaMashiach. And not just Rabbi Akiva, but other people in that generation as well. For Dimahu V'Kol Chachmei Doirai. Everybody in that generation, all the wise people in that generation thought, Shehu Melech HaMashiach. The Bar Kochba really was the real thing. If you think about the world the Rambam described, he was rebelling against the Romans, fighting the wars of the Jews, taking back sovereignty, which he did for a few years at least, for the Jewish people in Eretz Israel, and Shinerag Ba'avonoiso, until he was killed in the end for his sins, Bar Kochba. Kevan Shenerag, and the minute he was killed, neither then everybody knew She'ein Mashiach. Oh, you can't be a dead Mashiach. V'loi shalu mimenu chachamim, but nobody ever asked him loi ois v'loi mokus to do any kind of miracles. And the proof that Rambam is bringing from Bar Kochba is everyone felt that he was the Mashiach, but no one asked him to walk on the water or turn the loaves to the fishes or anything. That's not relevant to us. That's a non-Jewish idea of Mashiach, says the Rambam. That's certainly not our idea of Mashiach. Bar Kochba was a military general, and what we thought, bless you, was a great tzaddik, and in the end he turned out not to be a great tzaddik. And he was killed because he failed and he was not a tzaddik, and then we knew therefore that he wasn't the Mashiach. Built into this line of the Rambam is a bit of a current vikuach, current argument. Do we believe in the concepts of a Mashiach who then dies and could still be the Mashiach? Or not? Because the Rambam appears to say that one of the clear things that proves that this person may have been a great person, may have been a real possibility, but turned out not to be the Mashiach, is they died. Okay, fine. What's that? Has to be immortal. It doesn't say anywhere. And therefore, it doesn't say it has to be mortal. We'll see. Immortal. No, 1 second. He's talking about when he dies, having failed to bring about what Mashiach needs to bring about. We'll see soon that Mashiach will die, Rambam says, but only after it's clear that you must have Mashiach are in progress. There's a shopping list. We'll see the Rambam list that thing later. Well, the Mashiach has to do this, 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 and this. And then he could die. If he dies before he does that, then you know he's not the Mashiach. Now, come along those who wish to say, this doesn't prove anything, and say, look, Bar Kochba was killed because of his Averus. This doesn't say that you can't have a tzaddik who dies and then comes back again and is now the real Mashiach. And therefore people in Chabad who are trying to fit the Chabad understanding into the Rambam, of course the Chabadniks are very into the Rambam in a very big way, they say, no, this doesn't prove anything, because this doesn't prove anything about the Rebbe, because the Rebbe was never killed, he never died with Averus, Chas v'Chalila, he died a tzaddik, and therefore who says from here that he cannot reappear as Tiras HaMesim, as the Mashiach. I'm just leaving that as an open debate. I'm not really going to talk about the Chabad issue in this forum because it's not directly relevant. The two books you need to read are the following. Rabbi Berger's book, his book, which it talks about the Messiah and the something of indifference. I'm not sure. Professor David Berger, Orthodox Indifference. The Scandal of Orthodox Indifference. David Berger. Professor Berger from YU, who is a very considerable Talmud Chacham, and wrote a very extensive analysis of why he felt the whole Chabad thing was an outrage, and he wanted to speak out against it. By the way, that book was endorsed by Rav Aaron Feldman, of Nei Israel in Baltimore, as being a good statement of that. The book that you then need to read to see the other side of the argument is a book by Rabbi Chaim Rappaport in London called The Messiah Problem, where he defends Chabad against the accusations made by Professor Berger. He himself, Rabbi Rappaport, is also a tremendous Talmud Chacham. And he's a Lubavitcher, he's not a Messianic Lubavitcher, but he felt that Rabbi Berger's book was too aggressive in attacking certain aspects of Chabad. The Messiah Problem. You can get both of those books on Amazon, and if you want to read a good, intelligent statement of both sides of the story, they are the books that I recommend that you read. I have them both in my house. I haven't looked at them in detail for a couple of years, but that's my recommended reading on that. Now, so let's go on. The Messiah Problem. Okay. The first one was the Rebbe, Messiah, and the Scandal of Orthodox Indifference, or something like that. Something like that. Okay, now let's go. The Ikah Hadvarim. Oh, so what's the essence of Mashiach? The last paragraph, number 5. Kachahe. This is the real issue. Shehatar hazois ein chukeu mishpateu mishtanim le'olam. The Torah will never change. The Torah and the rules of the Torah will never be abolished. Ula'ol mi'olamim, ever and ever and ever. Ve'ein moisifim aleim. We cannot add to them. Ve'loi goyrim mehem. We can't take away from them. Kol ha'moisif oy goreya. Anyone who adds and takes away, or shegila panim b'torah, or reveals new understandings of the Torah. Ve'hotzi dvarim shel ha'mitzvos mipshutaim, and we take away the idea of the basic understanding of the mitzvos. Harizeh bevadei rosh ve'apikoros. Such a person is a Rosh and Apikoros. Now, who's the Rambam talking about? There's a whole Kabbalistic understanding of the nature of Mashiach, which talks about a Torah Chadasha, that there'll be a new Torah. It's based on Makoros and Chazal. It's based on the ideas that the Yomim Tovim will be abolished, and that the Halacha will be abolished, apart from Purim, etc., etc. We'll see how the Rambam deals with that in a minute. And the Rambam wants to tell you at the very beginning here, that's Apikorosis. That's heresy. To say that the Torah will be abolished and the Torah will be changed and there'll be a new reality. And part of that discussion is that not only will the Torah not be changed, but therefore physical reality will not be changed. Because if physical reality changes, then the Torah has to change as well. Because if we're living in a miraculous world which doesn't look like the world in which we live in today, so how does the Torah that we have today apply to that world? It doesn't. You'd have to change the whole Torah to go with that. And therefore for the Rambam, the idea of a non-miraculous Mashiach, it's not just because it's a political Olam Hazer process, but it's also intrinsically connected with the idea that the Torah can never change. And more so, remember the first three Ikrim, the proofs of God's existence, of God's unity, of God's non-physicality, are based in philosophy and logic. We saw this. The Rambam uses Aristotelian logic and proof to understand this is how we know that God exists from a rational perspective. In a world which turns on its head and everything changes and nature changes and reality changes, what happened to the Rambam's first three Ikrim? How can I now prove the philosophical existence of God in a world where none of these rational proofs work anymore because everything's changed? So there's much more at stake for the Rambam than an issue of, well, are there going to be miracles or not miracles? It goes to the roots of his whole philosophy of the Torah never changing and the proofs of God, etc. And therefore the Rambam ascribes to a non-miraculous emotional Mashiach. Have a look at number six. Al-Yale al-Haleif. Don't think in your mind for 1 minute. Should be emotional Mashiach, he battled Davam in Hagashil Oilam. That anything will change of the normal course of the world. Or yeah, sham chidush b'maaseh breishis. Or there'll be anything in nature which is different. Ela oilam kim min hagoy hoilach. The world will go in its normal way. You'll still have to sit in traffic to get to work in the morning. Okay? There'll still be sick people that need to go to the hospital. We don't believe that there'll be no sickness and no problems. All these problems will still be here. V'zeh shenama b'yishaya. When it says in Yishaya, v'gar ze'ev in keves, that the wolf will lie down, will live with the lamb. V'namer im gdi yirbat, and the leopard will crouch down with the kid. Moshel v'chida. That's not to be taken literally. That doesn't mean that animals will be befriending each other, and lions will be sitting there, you know, cuddling up with little sheep. That's not what it is. In Yanadav, what does it mean? Sheyu Yisrael Yoshim lebetach. It means the Jewish people will live in security. Im rishei ha'olam, with the non-Jewish people of the world who are wicked. Who are compared to a wolf, the Namer, to a leopard. And he brings a posik, Shinema, Zevar, Eva, Shishadadam, Kei, Namer, Shoked, Al Arehem. The non Jews who try to kill us are compared to these wild animals. The Yachru Kulam, but all of these non Jewish people will return, Ladas Ha'emes, to the true religion. Now there's a big debate what the Rambam means by this. Does he mean that they will convert to Judaism? Does he mean that they will become monotheists? Peace-loving monotheists, there's a whole debate about that. But the point is, what they won't do is they won't want to kill us. And what's more, your yigzalu, they won't want to steal. V'lo yashchisu, they won't want to destroy. Elo yochlu davar hamutzah benachas Yisrael. They will live and eat what they're allowed to eat and not take other people's things away, and they will live in peace together with the Jewish people. Shineema, the ariyeh kebakar yochel teven, the lion will eat straw like the ox. It doesn't mean that lions will miraculously now be vegetarians. And again, the Rambam is very conscious of other themes in Jewish thinking which do say that the animals will be vegetarians, that the animals will go back to their Gan Eden existence, which seems to be a vegetarian. If you look at what God gave to the animals to eat in Gan Eden, it was grass. They weren't allowed to eat each other. So the Rambam, no. When it says that the lion will eat straw, it means that the people of the world will eat what they're allowed to eat. They won't abuse other people. They won't take away other people's food, etc., etc. Everything similar to this, haksuvim ve'inyan ha-mashiach, mesholim heim, they are all parables. Don't take them literally, says the Rambam. And the Rambam, of course, in his Yud Gimel Ikrim at the beginning, in the introduction to Chelek, Perek Chelek, he goes on at length about how people don't understand parables. People take everything literally, and therefore they misread and they misunderstand Judaism in a very significant way. He says, don't do that. Everyone will know when Mashiach comes, what exactly the Moshe referred to, and what was hinted to in them. And we're going to come back to that soon, where the Rambam is going to tell us that we don't really know exactly at this stage what Mashiach is going to look like, what the days of Mashiach are going to look like. We have ideas. We know much more than we know about Olam Haba. But nevertheless, only when Mashiach comes will you be able to say, ah, yes, this is this, and this is how this works, and this is how this works. We can't know that then. And he quotes Chazal, he says, Amru Chachamim, Ein Bein Olam Azeli Yimas Mashiach, and a Shibud Malchiyas Bilvad. The only difference, say Chazal, and this is a machlokes in Chazal, and the Rambam is paskened like one opinion over the other. More about that next week, please God. There is no difference between this world and Yimos HaMashiach El Shibud Malchus Bilvad, apart from the affliction and the oppression of the non-Jewish world. Therefore, the Rambam's understanding of Mashiach is a United Nations that really works. I say that seriously. The concept of the United Nations is a deeply messianic concept for the Rambam. And indeed, it's not coincidental if you go to the United Nations. It has a posuk from Yeshaya written on the front. They were conscious of that as well. It has a sculpture of a gun, which is, you know the sculpture there in New York, with its barrel tied in a knot so that you can't shoot anymore. Now, of course, we can all be skeptical and cynical and say, look, it's a joke and it's just bias and it's just an opportunity for this and corrupt. And all of that is true to some degree. But the concept of the United Nations, that people won't fight each other anymore, but they will help each other, this is a deeply Maimonidean, messianic concept. He introduced this, as far as he goes, Judaism introduced this to the world. And what's more, and this is actually, I think, really fascinating, look at number 7, when the Rambam describes Mashiach, he says, about Oysa Hazman, in that time, lo yihye sham lo ra, there'll be no hunger. Velo milchama, there'll be no war. Velo kinna, there'll be no jealousy. Vatacharus, and there'll be no competition. Competition here means like people stealing from each other. Shehatayva tiye mushpat har, but there'll be goodness everywhere in the world. Vakol ha'madani mitzuyim ka'afar, all the good things in the world will be available like dust. Now, one second, didn't the Rambam just tell me it was not miraculous? Listen to what the Rambam's saying. The Rambam's saying the only reason there are hungry people in the world today is because people don't give them the food. Not because there's not enough food to go around, but because people won't share it. And there are only reasons that there are people that are dying of diseases. It's not because there isn't enough money to make cures. There's enough money to create cures for cancer and diseases. But hundreds and hundreds of trillions of dollars are being put into weapons development and put into killing each other. Just think if all of that money was put into curing cancer, curing other diseases in the world, then the existence of those diseases would not be what it is today. This is, of course, a utopian vision, but it doesn't require any kind of miraculous change. It requires a change in mindset, which is a choice that human beings make. Now, what you're seeing here, and I want to alert you to something else which is fascinating, the Rambam's understanding of Mashiach is not something sent by God. It's something earned by man, which is that the human race will rise to a level whereby it deserves Mashiach, it earns Mashiach, and Mashiach can then usher in this era of new human understanding. You will immediately begin to understand that this seems to be at odds with the concept of Yuridus Hadoiris. Yuridus Hadoiris, the idea of the decline of the generations, which we take as almost axiomatic within Judaism, and we'll see soon some sources on that, that every generation goes down and down and down and down and down and down. How can such a process lead to the Rambam's Mashiach? It can't. In order for the Rambam's Mashiach to ever arrive, there has to be a process where things go up and up and up and up and up to the point where Mashiach is able to come. If you subscribe to the entire package of Yuridus HaDoros, if you like, then you have to believe in a miraculous Mashiach. Because Mashiach will only come when we hit rock bottom, which is
what people often understand to be Mashiach, which is not the Rambam's Mashiach, okay? When we hit rock bottom, Mashiach will come and raise the whole world, change everything, do miracles, and then everything will suddenly go zip up from 0 to 100. That's not the Rambam's vision. The Rambam's vision is a world which rises from through up to 100 as you go along. And this again, as I said before, the idea of the United Nations, if it worked, would be very much this concept. I want to tell you a little anecdote. It has a political ramification. Everyone's talking today about the two-state solution. There should be a Palestinian state, there should be a Jewish state, etc., etc. Why are people not talking about the one-state solution? What's wrong with the one-state solution? The Arabs, by the way, are very happy with the idea of the one-state solution. Just draw a line around everything that we consider to be Eretz Israel and give everybody the vote and let's all be one big happy family and we'll have one country. What's wrong with that? And again, many in the Arab side would be delighted with that. Oh, so the problem that everybody has with that is the demographic time bomb. What do you mean? You're going to give votes to millions and millions of people who are not supportive of the Jewish state. Within a few years, then there's going to be no Jewish state. So Rabbi Riskin in Efrat once told me a very interesting thing. He told, it wasn't just to me, he was speaking to a group of people. He said in the 1970s, when they were setting up all the Yishuvim in Yehuda v'Shomron, so Rav Tzvi Yehuda Cook came up to him and said to him he wanted him to bring Efrat into the Gush Emunim movement, into that group of Yishuvim, which are very much part of Rav Tzvi Yehuda's messianic understanding of Reshit Smichat Gulati. And Rav Riskin refused. Declined, I should say, not refused. He said no. And Rav Yehuda said, why? So he says, look, there are millions and millions of Arabs. What about the 2.5 million, 3 million Palestinian Arabs living in the Yehuda v'Shomron area? What are you going to do with those people? So he said, Rav Tzvi Yehuda clasped his hands, put his hands around his hands, and said to him, Heim Yit Yahadu. They'll become Jewish. And he was serious. He was serious. Why are you worried about it? Heim Yit Yahadu? No, not who needs them. The Rambam's understanding of Mashiach is that we need each other. We need these people. They need us, and we will live together, and they will become our friends. So Rav Riskin said to him, okay, when they become Jewish, then you can come back and talk to me and I'll talk about it again. But what I want you to understand is that if you're looking at a messianic process which involves the people of the world rising to a level which the Rambam is talking about, then who's worried about the one-state solution? You're worried about demographics? Yeah, it means you don't believe in Mashiach. Okay, so it's going to be an interesting question as to what extent Rav Menachem Porush used to say, yes, you should believe the Mashiach is coming this afternoon, but you should plan that he's not coming for 200 years. That's the difference of approach. That was not Rav Tzvi Yehuda's approach. And the question is, who really believes the Mashiach? The one who really says, fine, just draw a line and give everybody the vote because Mashiach's really coming, or the one that says, 1 second, we can't really live our lives on that basis, can we? Or can we? Or should we? So that's going to be an interesting political question. No, the two-state solution is bad. I'm not. Because not giving land to anybody. No one's giving anything to anybody. You're drawing a line, you say, this is Medinat Yisrael, it now includes this, 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 and this. No one's giving anything to everyone. And the demographic time bomb, don't worry about it. You must have a Mashiach. What are you worried about? Now, I'm just throwing that out as being, there are practical ramifications for this whole debate, which impacts on the way that we run our political life. And the truth is, this is not a political discussion, but as far as I'm aware, the political approach of most of the people living in Yehuda v'Shomron is basically Rav Tzvi Yehuda's approach, isn't it? What do they think is going to happen? The people are not supporting the two-state solution, so which solution are they supporting? So if you actually scratch below the surface, you'll see this is a real issue in politics, and therefore it impacts on the way that works. But anyway, that's not for now. Now, let us go further. So we now have a world without hunger, because someone once gave me the following statistic, I don't know if it's true or not, that if just the American people cut their entertainment budget by 10% for 1 year. Just 10% less on making Hollywood movies, 10% less on theatre, cinema, going out to eat, etc. Just have 90%. Just cut 10%. You could feed all the starving in Africa. Just 10% of that multi-billion dollar budget. So why are they starving in Africa? Because we won't. We won't do that. Okay, so, no, it's the question of who leads, the leaders or the people, okay? We can't always blame everybody else, but that's not for now. Now, I just want to draw to your attention that yes?
It doesn't even require any sacrifice on the part for the Americans. The American government controls how much each farmer is allowed to plant and sell. If they simply eliminated all of those restrictions on the farmers, and they could plant as much as they wanted, they could feed the whole.
So why are there restrictions? Because of vested interest to keep prices high, etc., etc., etc. Anyway, look at number nine. Look at number nine. Keeping Mashiach and politics apart is a difficult business. Because if it's real, then it's real. Okay, have a look at number nine. So the Ravid jumps in. The Ravid here is just a one-liner, but it represents a whole school of thought, which is basically saying to the Rambam, what is going on here? Look at number nine. Quoting this, what we just read before, the Yemotza Melech HaMashiach Yodeh Lekol Be'eze Davar Haya Mashal. Okay, Uma Inyan Ram Zubaza says the Ravid like this. Amar Avram, the Haloi Kosov B'Tayra. Doesn't it say in the Torah, Vashivoyti Chaya Ram in Haaretz? I will take all the wild animals out of the land. That's not a posik in Yeshaya. That's a posik in the Torah. It's a posik in Vayikra. Says the Ravid, don't you think that sounds miraculous? Are you going to tell me that I can't read the Torah literally either? To which the Rambam may turn around and say, well, yes, I am going to tell you that actually. But the Ravid wants to bring in this comment to say, I'm sorry, our understanding of Mashiach is a miraculous Mashiach. And on Tchias HaMeitim, also the Ravid comes in and says, well, surely Tchias HaMeitim is a miraculous thing. More about that next time, Mitzvah Hashem. But there is a whole school of thought, other than the Rambam school of thought, which understands that Yemotza Mashiach will be a miraculous era. And I suspect that the way most people learn about Mashiach, if they learn about it at all in any kind of organized way through their Jewish education, is there is some expectation of a miraculous something. It's not the Rambam's view of Mashiach. It's the other view of Mashiach, the Kabbalistic view of Mashiach. But again, that goes hand in hand with the concept of Yuridus Hadoiris, which is also very much sold as the Jewish view on the world, that the world is going down, which is another reason why people have a problem with evolution. How can evolution be true when we believe in Yuridus Hadoiris? Because everything has to go down. Things can't go up. It's not so straightforward. If you don't subscribe to Yuridus Hadoiris in the way that people normally do, then everything looks a little bit different. If you're interested in that a little bit more, I'll refer you to a book a little bit later. Now, have a look at page 3. What, Matthias? What about us? What about the world? The world is... Excuse me. The world, you look at that. So let's look at the world. The world, compared to the world 200 years ago, is light years ahead. People used to live till they were 40 years old, and that was considered to be acceptable. Second, isn't health provision, isn't the quality of life, isn't the concept of human rights, the Geneva Convention, the laws of, and okay, these things are not perfect, and maybe even they don't work in some ways at all, but is the world that we live in, is better or worse as a world than the world of the Vikings? I find it very hard to subscribe to a view that understands the world we live in today to be a less moral and less ethical world than the world of the Vikings.
It's better than the Victorian.
The fact that it's not perfect doesn't mean that it's not better. And I really feel that we've really swallowed this idea that the world is a disaster. Why is the world a disaster? The world needs to be fixed. We need to fix things. It's a disaster. I'm not sure. I think we sometimes forget quite how bad things used to be. Yeah? In a world where a person had 10 children and they were lucky if 2 or 3 of them survived to adulthood. Yeah? That's not a world, Baruch Hashem, that we live in today. And also, morally and ethically, people have values that perhaps are better than those of the Vikings, although maybe, I don't know, I don't want to do down the Vikings, by the way. If there are any Vikings listening, God forbid I want to cast aspersions on the Norwegians. But, what's that? Shh. even in the Jewish world, even in... Excuse me? There are more people learning Torah today in the world, far more than there were at the time of the Rambam. There is more scholarship. There are 5.5 million Jewish people living in Eretz Yisrael. The Rambam couldn't even find a minion. Yeah? If the Rambam were to come to today's Jewish world, would he feel that it was a... Look how the Rambam describes his own world. The Rambam describes his own world as Alapanim. He says, the Rambam in his own world says that hardly anyone understands anything. There's only a few people that really understand what Judaism's all about. Anyway, even the rabbis are useless. You see how he describes his own world? He describes his own world as a world which is like degenerate. Added to which, they're being attacked constantly by the Crusaders and constantly by the Muslims. Radical anti-Jewish fervor all over the world. I'm not sure the Rambam would consider his world the world of Gan Eden. But okay, look, you know, you can disagree with me. It's just I think in context, not quite so clear. Have a look at number 11, please. Look at page 3, number 11. So what is the process of Mashiach? Let's try put some nuts and bolts on this. It says like this. How do I know who the Mashiach is? It says the Rambam. In Yamoid, Melech mi beis David. If a king, a ruler, a political leader, because that's what a king is, arises from the house of David, Hayyiv a Torah, and a practicing, committed person who keeps the Torah, Va'oisig b'mitzvahs, and they're involved in doing mitzvahs, k'David aviv, just like David was, k'fi Torah shebichtav v'shabal peh, they have to be committed to the Torah shebichtav, the Torah shebal peh, because of course that won't change, as we already said. V'chai kol Yisrael leilech ba, and he forces or persuades, but there is a certain element of a movement here, the Jewish people, to also walk in the Torah. Ulachazek bidka, and there's a national, international Jewish Baal Tshuva movement together with Mashiach. V'ilachem ulchamas Hashem, and he fights the wars of God, which is some kind of political issue. Harizeh b'cheska shehu Mashiach. There's two levels of Mashiach. Then I can say this person's probably Mashiach. They have a chazaka of Mashiach. So in order for someone to be a candidate, what do they need to do? They need to be frum. They need to be involved in Torah and mitzvahs, Torah shebichtav, Torah shebal peh. They need to lead the Jewish people in tshuva. And they need to fight the battles of God. Then you qualify as a candidate. What's that? Be from Beit David. So on this alone, it's very clear why many people felt that the Lubavitcher Rebbe was indeed a candidate to be the Mashiach. You have to question, what does Milchamas Hashem mean? Does Milchamas Hashem mean figuratively? It's not a coincidence that the youth movement of Agbal is called the Army of God, because they're fighting Milchamas Hashem. Or does it really mean you have to get a sword in your hand and go out there and lead? Does it have to be a hezdenik? Does it have to be someone out there in the Israeli army with leading a platoon fighting the wars of God? That's also an interesting way of looking at it. So let's carry on. So that person's a candidate. The im asa, and if they do all this, the hitzliach and succeed, the nitzach kol umas shevzava, and they conquer all the land, the people around them. Ubana Migdash, and then they build a base of Migdash Bimakoimai. You have to be in the right place. You can't build it in Monsi. Okay? The Kibbetz Nidche Yisrael, and then they gather in the exiles of Israel. Harizeh Mashiach Bavadai. Then I know they're Mashiach. So there's a list of things to qualify as a candidate, and there's a list of things, says the Rambam, to actually then know that this definitely has to be the Mashiach. The Imloyitzliach Adkoi, but if they don't succeed, they do half of this. Or they are killed. The Yadua She'ein Zeh She'hivticho Alav HaTorah. You know that this is not the one the Torah was talking about. The Haruka Kol Malchei Beis David. They can be like any other of the kings of David. Hashleimim V'Ksherim. Doesn't mean they're a bad person. They were a candidate. That's nice. They could be a really great candidate. Shemesim. But they died. Here it sounds very, very like you can't be a dead Messiah. Yeah? So, you know, you could be a good candidate. You didn't achieve what Mashiach has to achieve. Building the base of Mikdash and etc. etc. That's too bad. You were a great candidate and it didn't work out. So why do we have these near misses, says the Rambam? To test us. To see if we'll stay committed or if we'll get whipped up in messianic fervor and lose the plot. Yeah? Shenemar, Amina Maskidim, Ikashlu, there will be those who are clever who will stumble, Litzroi Fahem Lavaro Ulaladein. ad eighth case, that they will be there to purify us and to clarify us until the end comes. Ki oid lemayed, and he brings his posik in Daniel, and then he brings a part of the Mishnah Torah which was censored by the church. And he says, Va'af Yeshu Hanotzri, even Jesus is Nazareth. Shedima Sheyia Mashiach, he made out that he was the Mashiach. By the way, the Rambam in the Yigeres Teiman very clearly says that Jesus never claimed to be God or to start a new religion. That came afterwards. Okay, and the Rambam says that clearly, that Jesus claimed to be the Mashiach and he wasn't. And he claimed to, and he tried to abolish the Torah, which disqualified him from any kind of place as a Mashiach. The Nerag Bebeistin, and he was killed by the Beistin. If you want to get into an argument about who killed Jesus, was it the Romans or was it the Jews? The Rambam says, it was the Jews, don't worry, okay? You don't have to share that with everybody, okay? Although it doesn't mean that they physically killed him, they handed him over to the Romans, etc., etc. No, correct. Daniel already prophesies about the coming of Jesus. Shinaman, he brings Psukim, it says, and then he goes to the next line, he says, Vakiyesh Mikshal Gadol Mizeh, was there ever any greater stumbling block to the world, to the Jewish people at least, than to the coming of Jesus? Shekol HaNeviim Dibru Sheh HaMashiach Goel Yisrael HaMashiach, everyone says that the Mashiach will save the Jewish people, will redeem the Jewish people. U'mekames Nidcheim, and gather their exiles in. U'mechazik Mitzvoisam, and strengthen their mitzvahs. Vazeh, and what did he achieve? Gorom La'abid Yisrael B'cherev. Everything got worse after him. We got destroyed. We got thrown out. We became lower and we became scattered, etc. And therefore, it's very, very clear that Hichlif HaTorah, where he wanted to change the Torah, which he clearly did. Well, Ahato Yisroi Va'olam, and he misled the world La'avad Eloha Mibaladei Hashem into paganism. The Rambam understands Christianity clearly to be pagan, to be idolatrous. Says that is not a step forward for the Jews. However, and I didn't bring you the whole source. The Rambam then goes on to say, but the ways of God are not like the ways of man. And in fact, Christianity and Islam have served a global purpose in the world, which is that they prepared everybody for the coming of Mashiach. Because he says, now everybody talks about Mashiach. Everybody's into their own Mashiach. Before we brought this along, nobody was interested in Mashiach. In fact, the idea of linear time, that there was a beginning, there was a process, and there was an end game, that was foreign to the world in the time of the Greeks and the Romans. The world was circular. Time was circular. What goes around comes around. You're locked in to fate, to history. There's nothing you can do. There's no end to the process. We said, no, 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 no. There is an end. There's a beginning. There's a middle. There's an end. Now everybody agrees with us. The Christians agree with us. The Muslims agree with us. That's like already half the world. And therefore he says that introduces everyone to the idea of Mashiach, even though it's a bit of a twisty, turny route together. Don't forget Mashiach comes riding on a donkey. If you ever ride a donkey, you'll understand the mashal. You kick the donkey and says go forward, the donkey goes back. Yeah, you kick the donkey to go left, the donkey goes where it likes, the donkey goes right. The whole mashal of Mashiach riding on a donkey is that it's unpredictable and uncontrollable. It's a process which is up and down and up and down, and therefore the Rambam describes it in that way. And in Source 12 he says like this, it seems, says the Rambam, that Mashiach has to involve some kind of a war. And before Gog and Magog, Yamoid Navi, there'll be a prophet, the Israel, that comes to the Jewish people, to prepare them, to straighten them and prepare them. And he brings a posik, Hine anochi sholeach lachem et Eliyahu Navi. Eliyahu Navi is not coming to tell anyone that they're Jewish or not Jewish. He's not coming to change everybody's yichus. He's coming to prepare the world, to bring peace to the world. This seems to be before Milchamis Gog and Magog, he says. The Yesh Min HaChachomim, there are other rabbis, he says, She'aymrim She'koidim Bias Melech HaMashiach Yavo Eliyahu. Now, who was he talking about before? Not clear. He now starts talking about Eliyahu Hanavi, because don't forget the Pasuk in Malachi doesn't say Eliyahu. It says Eliya. Okay, fine. But Kol Elu HaDvarim, and here is the key, all of these things are kiyot v'hem, lo yeda adam hechihiyu. Nobody knows exactly how it's going to be. Actually you, until it happens. Shidvarim stumim heim etzel neviim, because these things were not clear to the neviim either. V'gam ha-chachamim, and here's a very important point, even the rabbis, he says, Elohim Kabbalah B'dvarim Elu. They had no Masorah on these things. They were just reading the psukim, trying to work out what they mean. And this is a fascinating statement of the Rambam. In every area of Jewish life, in Shabbos and Kashrus and philosophy, Hashkofa, so the rabbis weren't just taking a text and trying to work out what it means. They had a Masorah, they had a Kabbalah from Sinai as to how to read the text, as to certain things, halacha l'mashiach. Not true of Mashiach. And when it comes to Mashiach, people are scrabbling around. Even Chazal are kind of trying to work out from the psukim what it means, but no one really knows for sure. That's why there's so much disagreement on this issue. The alcohol panim ain't sudur havayis dvarim elu loy dikdukan ikat bedas. These issues are not central to the Jewish religion, and he's making a very important point. He's saying, don't get bogged down by the details of Mashiach. That's not important. It's not central to the Jewish religion. Don't get too involved in agadatas of trying to understand how this works. Don't get too involved in the midrashim. How amurim b'inyanim, and talking about Mashiach or kiyot to behem. Because don't make them the central feature of your life. They won't bring you to Ahavas Hashem. What will they bring you to? They'll bring you to disaster, because you'll become messianic. And the Rambam is here teaching that messianism is osa. It's a halacha sefer. He's paskening that it's osa to be messianic, because it'll just lead the Jewish people down the wrong path. What you have to be is confident that Mashiach will come, understanding what Mashiach means, and davening for Mashiach, but don't make it the center of your life. And every messianic movement in the history of the Jewish people has been disastrous. From Bar Kokhba, which led to a greater massacre than even the Churban Bayis Sheni, Shabtai Tzvi, and if you ask many historians, the Jewish world is still recovering from the debacle of Shabtai Tzvi. If you look at Rabbi Wein, talks about this. Other historians talk about this. That many of the modern Jewish movements that we see in the world today, Hasidus, the Yeshiva movement, the Muslim movement, Reform, Conservative, and non-religious Jewish social movements, communism, Bundism, many Zionism, almost all of these things are responses to the disaster of Shabtai Tzvi. That the Jewish people were so convinced that Mashiach was here, more convinced than you could imagine. People were selling their houses. People were going to their next door neighbors that only a few years before had been massacring them in the Chelmsky massacres in 1648, and they were basically thumbing their nose at them and saying, we don't care about you anymore because Mashiach is here, we're all going to Israel. The Dutch East India Company were unable to charter ships because the Jews had chartered them all because they were going back to Zion. And when Shabtai Tzvi was then cornered by the caliph in the Ottoman ruler and told, this is ridiculous, either convert to Islam or I'll kill you. So he converts to Islam straight away. What that does to the Jewish people cannot even be understood, the disaster that caused. And it wasn't just like the ordinary people. They were big people. They were big rabbis who felt that he was the one, that this was it. And the Rambam is telling us that this is such a disaster. Any messianic movement we see today, in any post-Holocaust existence, messianism balloons. We saw that after 1492 and the return to Sfat and the messianic movement in Sfat of the Kabbalists there. We saw this after the massacres of Tachpatat in 1648 and Shabtai Tzvi, and we see this after the Holocaust. The Jewish people is still trying to work out how to deal with the Holocaust. Religious Zionism, Chabad Messianism, all of these movements are deeply messianic movements, and I think the Rambam is giving us a big health warning that if you really commit to these and make it the center point of Judaism, then it's not a good thing. Historically, it never has been. And it's not for me to criticize or to say anything, but if they make that the center, if making Mashiach the center of your Jewish life is that, then yes, indeed. But maybe they're not. Maybe they'll turn around and say, no, this is not the central Jewish idea. This is just one of the things that we're focused on. Well, it's clear from the Rambam that Mashiach will build the base of Mikdash. Other sources are not so clear. The Yerushalmi, there's a Gemara Yerushalmi that seems to say that we have to build the base of Mikdash and the Mashiach will come. But yes, in the Maimonidean understanding of Mashiach, building the base of Mikdash before Mashiach is a non-starter. That doesn't mean he thinks it's going to come down from heaven. That's not what he's saying at all. It's part of a political process. But we have to do it, things in order. Yes. Correct. In fact, on that point, perhaps just turn over to page 4 and have a look at this little... I brought you an English quote from the introduction to Perichelik. I didn't bring this whole thing in Hebrew, but he talks about Mashiach. You can read this later for yourselves. Pick it up on the right-hand column, please. He says like this, go down about 8 or 9 lines. He says like this, for the earth will be full of the line that begins, as it is said, for the earth will be full of the knowledge of God. Discords and wars will cease, as it is said. Nation shall not lift up sword against nation. That, I think, is the pasuk on the United Nations building. Great perfection will appertain to him that lives in those days. And he will be elevated through it to Chai Olam Haba, the world to come. The Rambam clearly understands the purpose of Mashiach. We didn't quite get to it, we'll maybe deal with it next time. The purpose of Mashiach is for us to earn Olam Haba. We will live in a world which is free of trouble, we're able to focus, etc., etc. And then he goes on to address the point you said. But the Messiah will die, and his son and son's son will reign in his stead. God has clearly declared his death in the words, he shall not fail nor be discouraged till he has set judgment on the earth. In other words, once Messiah has established the days of Messiah, then his job is done. His kingdom will endure a very long time, and the lives of men will be long also. Because longevity is a consequence of the removal of sorrows and cares. Very interesting. People living to long lives is not some kind of miracle. It's a product of less stress, healthier eating, and better medication. And again, who says that people won't live till they're 300 years old? Is that ridiculous? If you'd have told people 100 years ago people were living to 105, 108, 110, not just some people, but quite a lot of people, that would also have been ridiculous. And therefore the Rambam says that the people's lives may even be longer, but not through miracles. Let not the fact of the duration of his kingdom for thousands of years seem strange to you. For the sages have said that when a number of good things come together, it is not an easy thing for them to separate again. The days of Mashiach are not ardently longed for on account of vegetation and riches, and he goes on something else which we'll deal with in a minute. So it could be that people will live a lot longer once this era comes in, but not because of miracles, but because of the nature of genetic engineering. There was an article on the BBC World Service a few months ago about the people who are studying the concepts of aging and longevity say that there is no reason in principle why people shouldn't live to 200 or 300 years old. They just have to crack the necessary processes genetically to enable that to happen and get rid of the diseases that kill people younger. It's not a ridiculous thing. It may not, the way the world works at the moment, may not be a very welcome thing. Because, you know, in order for people to live to that kind of age, you have to have the kind of people you want to live till that kind of age. It's a big brocha that some people die young. People who are trying to kill people and oppress the world, it's a brocha that they don't live to 300 years old. So you need these two things to go together. We just have a couple more minutes, and I want to just direct you to a couple more things. Where are we up to here? We were on page 3, second. Just two other things and we'll finish. At the bottom of page 3, on source number 13, the Rambam refers to the Sanhedrin. Now, the Sanhedrin, the Rambam says, needs to be set up before Mashiach comes. That's essential. In fact, the setting up of the Sanhedrin, says the Rambam here in his commentary on the Mishnah, in Masechet Sanhedrin, is one of the signs that Mashiach is on the way. So, what are we going to do about that? How can we have a Sanhedrin? We do not have smicha anymore. In order to have a Sanhedrin, you have to have musmachim. You have to have rabbis who have the real smicha, not what we call today smicha, which is really just like a heter to Paschal Shilas, but the real smicha with an unbroken tradition from Moshe Rabbeinu. So here the Rambam is faced with a little bit of an impasse. On the one hand, you need the Sanhedrin for Mashiach to come. On the other hand, you can't have the Sanhedrin because we know how long we have smicha. So here he innovates the halacha, which he also rules in the Mishnah Torah, which he says that if all the rabbis in Eretz Yisrael were to get together and decide to confer smicha onto one in particular individual, So that would be good enough to restart, to kickstart the process of real halachic smicha to lead to Mashiach. And therefore the Rambam opens up that possibility. You may be aware in the messianic world of post-1492, this was a process which was started in Sfat, that the Rav Yaakov Beirav wanted to begin the process of reintroducing smicha based on this Rambam and the halach in Mishnah Torah that he passes on this basis. And indeed he gave smicha to a few people, including Rav Yosef Karo, the Al-Sheikh, and a few others. What happened? The rabbis of Yerushalayim said, wait a minute, just because you're bigger than Yerushalayim, which they were, Sfat was a bigger community, you can't do this without our agreement, and we don't agree. And then because of the politics, the whole thing just fell apart, and then you ended up with a kind of a failed attempt to start smicha. But we see this whenever there's a messianic movement, the reinstitution of the Sanhedrin has always been part of that kind of underlying background sort of issue. We saw this in Napoleon. Napoleon started something he called the Sanhedrin. That was also, people felt Napoleon was a messianic figure. And by the way, Napoleon, when he tried to invade Eretz Israel to take it from the Ottomans, promised the Jews that if he succeeded, he would rebuild the Beis HaMikdash. This was a time of real potential messianic fervor. And also in our own days, there's also been attempts to restart the Sanhedrin. Even today, this is part of the religious Zionist system to try and rebuild and restart that system. So we haven't finished the sheet, and I'd like to just finish off some things next week, but I think we now have enough information at least to understand what the Rambam understands by Mashiach and to take it forward to clear for Nathan. Thank you very much.